Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lorddaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode to it once a week, once every 2 weeks. Just kind of depends on my schedule, but I'm usually pretty regular. Also, you're listening to this podcast in the most efficient way by entering Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. So get right into the action today. I've been away, of course. A lot of you guys know I just got married, so thank you for the congratulations and the kind words that I've seen on my Facebook page. A lot of stuff going on in kickboxing. I released my top 15 list for the best women fighters in the world. I'm going to try to do it quarterly. You know, last year I was like, I'm going to do it every month. And I realized that's just too difficult. So I think I'm going to try to do it, you know, here, then October, then December, you know, one at the end of the year. So try to stay with it. And I will do a breakdown of that at the end of the show. But first and foremost, I'm going to go ahead and get into a lot of the kickboxing action that's been going down, because there has been a lot of it. I won't talk about all the cards in specifically, but I will talk about some of the major combatants in action. For example, Chingiz Alazov defeats Zhaba Askarov in Russia by decision. Just a one-sided beatdown, was able to score successfully with low kicks, score to the body. Anything he wanted to do, he can do. Chingiz Alazov is on another level. This dude is the truth. He's so, so talented. He's one of my front runners for Fighter of the Year. Activity really, really helps in that regards. Clearly, there are people who've got bigger wins, like Misaki Nori's got a bigger win than anybody that Alzo beat in that tournament. But it means a lot that he's the champion, and I'm excited to see what, you know, happens with him down the road. Just all action, just a lot of fun. I mean, he's the truth, man. This guy is legit, and anytime he's competing, he's must-see TV. Going to go ahead and jump to, I'll do the Lion Fight that went down a couple days ago. Now, again, I mentioned this before. Top to bottom, Lion Fight isn't high-level international competition, so I will never really talk about the whole entire fight card. I will give credit where credit's due. They are giving a platform, and they're giving American athletes the opportunity to compete and get their hands raised at the highest level, you know, against U.S. level. Not the highest level, but against U.S. level. So as they grow and improve, you're starting to see some KOs and some stoppages, and you're starting to see people get better. But usually at the top of the card, the first two or the last two fights, there's usually something of note. And I will go ahead and talk about one of those right now. Chip Morozov-Pollard defeats Paul Banasiak, if I'm saying that correctly. Pollard, of course, is a mixed martial arts fighter who, you know, had a strong, solid stand-up game. But in mixed martial arts, he was controlled, taken down, and controlled, so he likes to be in a sport where he can use his tools and not worry about that. The cool thing about this fight was the back and forth. Paul Bonanziak doesn't have the best head movement, you know, like he's usually there to get hit, but man, was it awesome watching him stay with it, stay in there. Pollard hit him with a lot of big time shots, a lot of, you know, big time low kicks, big time boxing, you know, just he scored well with the big shots, or as I call them, you guys have heard me say it on this podcast before, he lands what I call the sexy shots, the shots that snap people's heads back. But Banasiak did a good job of looking for a consistent offense. He had some really good rounds here and there. He just couldn't sustain it against the power-punching Pollard. Pollard wins, and he won the cruiserweight title. I can't remember the exact weight, but it's cool for Pollard. Now, again, it's only going to have legitimacy if they bring in international competition. You know, it's you look at how they're doing with Iman Barlow. You look at how they did with Tiffany Von Soest in the past. It means something that they bring in the best in the world as a reflection of their title. So it's cool that he won this title, but now he's going to get some international names on that resume. And it doesn't have to be a huge step up. You know, it doesn't have to be like an absolute, you know, devastating international guy for the first one, you know. But eventually, if you have any title and you call yourself a world champion and the title represents world champion, it should reflect the talent in the world. If not, then it's just a promotional belt. So Pollard, great showing, awesome hands, really close the distance well, understands how to land big strikes. He takes offense here and there, but for the most part, he's a solid combatant. As he moves forward as champion, our test for him, and far as, you know, his title belt and what it reflects the world, he's going to have to beat some elite guys, or at least some more international names are going to have to be brought in for him. So I'm excited to see what they do with Pollard. Good stuff, good victory. We're going to go ahead and move to the main fight as Joe Nottawatt gets a unanimous decision, 48-47, over Pechenong Bachamek. And here's what I'll say about that, and I'll just go ahead and be real when talking about Pechenong. For me, as a guy who's been watching fighting for a long time, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not good. But whenever I see a Thai fighter who is a little, you know, active in the belly, you know, a little weighty in the belly, it tells me that they are way out of the weight class that they were good in. And if you go to Thailand, their critique of what the ideal body and fighting should be, it's different than the rest of the world. So, for example, over here in the States, I don't even say in Europe, we definitely look at like muscle, and we look at like abs and definition and that kind of deal. Whereas in Thailand, they look at lean. Lean matters a little bit more. So how much weight do you have on the side of your Thai shorts? That tells them a lot. If you're hanging over the side a little bit, then they'll tell you that in their definition, you're a little weighty, you're a little fat. You don't necessarily need to have a six-pack for them. You can have it, but they're looking more at the leanness of it. So when I saw this, I was like, okay, they brought in a Thai, but Nottawatt should handle this Thai pretty well. Pechenong was very, very competitive. He's right there. I mean, he rocks the Bachamek gym. Of course, that's where Bukau is now. I thought that it was a toss-up fight. I thought all the rounds were close. I thought that Joe Nottawatt, I could make an argument for him doing enough, but I also thought that Pechenong did enough as well. As I think I could see the argument for him winning three of the rounds, but super close. The unfortunate thing for this fight was, when Pollard and Banasiak were going at it, they put on a fight of the night, like awesome, awesome back and forth. Despite, you know, having a clear winner, it was an entertaining fight where you were on the edge of your seat a little bit. This one, super technical, super patient. It's almost like there was an agreement not to really hurt each other, that it had that feel to it. Nevertheless, Nottawatt came out, got his hands raised, and he is consistently the guy they promote the most on the of the Thai fighters. I think it's because he's based in the States now. They've had some pretty good ties in their stable over the years, so you got to give them credit there. Even though it didn't work on a long-time basis, I think he maybe competed for them twice. Yotsen Clyde's an elite guy, you know, so it's cool that they used him. I'd still like to see them, you know, bring Fabio Pinca back. He won the title. I haven't heard from him. I'd like to see them use Liam Harrison again. He won the title. I haven't heard from him. You know, it's Nottawatt. There are some guys out there who they can match him up with, but I got to see those guys, and it's got to be consistent. So Pechenong is not one of those elite guys. He's a solid name, just not what I would call one of the elite guys that they could bring in at this stage in his career. So, but still good stuff, and we'll see what happens next for Lion Fight. Kind of a gap between this one and the last one. I think their next one will be in September, and that's when Antonina Shevchenko should be back, and so hopefully good stuff to come from them down the road. We go from there to France. And in France, man, I'm going to have some fun talking about this one. The Beast Bob Sapp returns as he goes against Tony Gregory. First of all, shout out. Shout out to, you know, the Fight Night St. Tropez card. They did this really interesting thing where they brought in, you know, the fighters, or at least the main event anyways. They brought them in on jet skis across the water to the weigh-ins. And when they did that situation, they had Bob, who I didn't know was competing. Bob made a lot of money, and he said that he was going to stop after he made a certain amount. It sounds like he was good with his money. But I guess they just threw enough money at him for him to be like, okay, I'll come back and do the Bob Sapp. But Bob, of course, is going to put on a show. He's going to do antics, and he's going to go out there and, put it kindly, his effort when the fight starts usually isn't that high. I think he's got his mind made up that I made my money trying to win early. Now that I've, you know, lost, you know, once he started to lose, he changed tactic. He just seemed to go out there, and as soon as he took a legitimate shot, it appears that he is going down, and he's done fighting after that point. So when I saw that Bob Sapp was in this fight with Tony Gregory, that's what I was expecting. But I did not expect Bob to have a 1-1, a victory in the weekend, baby, because they go off there to the, you know, get off their jet skis, they do the weigh-ins, they're staring each other down, and Bob is going into a spiel, and for whatever reason, Gregory Tony decides that he's going to throw, whether it was water or beer, couldn't make it out, decides he's going to throw it at Bob. Throws it right at Bob, gets right in the face, right across his, I mean, like, just as clean a connect as you can have with water, was connected, or beer, or whatever they say it was connected to clear on Bob Sapp, get him in his face, which means Bob is pissed off. Bob's no longer trying to be the get-out-of-there guy. This is before the fight. He felt embarrassed. He then attacks Tony Gregory, and with ease, he launches Tony Gregory onto the ground. He falls into a table as people come in and try to break it up. Get to go ahead and say first victory to Bob Sapp. Fight takes off. During the fight, we get this, I don't know how I would describe the melee other than they move around. The moment Gregory scores a shot, which was like a nothing shot, like he threw like a kick that's, you know, Gregory is not a guy who's going to win with KO pop. It's just not him. He's not that kind of guy. He's got KOs here and there, but that's not how he wins. He wins because he's savvy, he's smart, and he outpoints you. And back in the day, he's got some pretty legitimate wins. He beat Ignashoff back in the day. He's just a talented, savvy guy who finds his moments. I want to say that he's got a Daniel Gita victory, too. I think Gita beats him after it, but I think that he might have beaten Gita in that. I could be wrong there. I could be thinking about Freddie Camacho. Please forgive me. I watch a lot of fights. Sometimes they get mixed up. Nevertheless, Tony Gregory's got a lot of legit wins in his past, and he goes out there. Throws like a weird kick, and he throws a shot to Bob Sapp as Bob's going down. It appears to me that this is not what one would call a devastating body shot, but Bob was done fighting, so Bob loses TKO in the first round. Bob just being Bob. I mean, let's just be real. Bob just being Bob. No one should be upset or disappointed by the fight, but the YouTube video or the Facebook and Twitter video that surfaced of him in the aftermath of getting beer dumped on him when he threw Tony Gregory on the ground, that's a 1-1 weekend for me, baby. 1-1 weekend. Next fight in this card I'm going to talk about is the brilliant, beautiful, wonderful head kick setup victory done by Johan Ladon as he gets a KO victory in the fourth round over Florin Kroger. Basically, the way this is set up is Ladon had done good work in the whole fight with the low kicks, in particular in the fourth round. You could see the damage really start to put it kindly, start to slow the guy down and, you know, make him earmuff up, make him not see things clear. And I really like the setup to it. So the final series to it is Johan Ladon goes jab, jab, drops his head off center, and then goes with the overhand right. Scores clean behind the ear. Florin looks a little shook up by it. You know, takes a deep breath, puts his earmuffs back on. They look to get into another exchange. Low kick scores, and Kroger takes it, and you could see in his face. You could see the wince from, okay, these are starting to build up. And then all of a sudden, Johan Ladon, right in front of him, his head drops, and he brings the right leg over the top. And when he throws the kick, the guard's up for Kroger. But the dropping of the head made him think that, okay, it's safe. I can come out of it. I can look for a strike out of it. Next thing you know, you get kicked in the head. It is just a beautiful trick played, you know, with the, you know, with the dipping of the head that gets the eyes to fall, that relaxes the defense, and then bang, you land the big offensive shot. So good stuff. In my personal opinion, really, really good stuff to see the kind of work that's been done and the kind of success that's been had by Johan Ladon as he's aged. He's had a great career. There was no period of time where I was like, Johan Ladon's the best in the world. But man, there were some periods of time where he was in the top 15, and he still goes out there, gets good wins, a very, very talented fighter. He's still making good money at this and having a great run at this period of time in his career. Daniel Sam defeats Tomas Mosny. If there's one guy that needs to get another opportunity at the glory level, it's Daniel Sam, because he has been consistently Tomas Mosny, who fights in glory, I believe, fought earlier this year for them. I think he's fought for them twice. Daniel Sam is just a savvy veteran kickboxer, Muay Thai fighter who stays around and finds his offense. He can land big here and there. He can land with low kicks and body kicks. He's a little kind of weird because it's hard to get a rhythm of him. He doesn't play a combination low kick game. He doesn't play a game that you can catch up with. But, man, he's just a talent. You know, he's just a talent in terms of a not a young up-and-coming stud that's going to, you know, blow the world away. Not a, you know, you know, Blade type guy. You know, he's not like, you know, Elias Blade. He's not like Muhammad Jiraiya. He's not like, you know, those young up-and-coming stars. He's a guy who's been in the game for a long time that figured out his skill set, figured out his identity, and figured out how to have offensive success. It is very, very, very important to have those guys in kickboxing. In particular, as we look at the next level of high-level athletes, it's so super cool to hear and see that this guy, this particular, you know, fighter from England, still out there doing it. I'm always happy to see Daniel Sand get his hand raised. Now, moving forward, it's just about him getting another big opportunity because he's doing it. He's beating guys. And a lot of times he's doing it out of England. So he's going on the road to get victory. So shout out to Daniel Sam. Stefane Spurugi gets a revenge victory, if you will, over Daniel Younga as the fall continues to happen for Younga. And it's just, I can't say in any other word that, or any other thing, it's just baffling a little bit. Well, I won't say baffling, but it's interesting, I'll say, as far as the fall of Daniel Younga, if you want. This is a guy who was once one of the best fighters in the world. We talked about, you know, if you've watched, listened to this podcast show through the years, the guy who I compared him to the most was Wendell Roche. Wendell Roche was not a big guy for heavyweight, but he was a tough guy, had a really good chin. He, you know, kept his earmuffs up, walk him down, look for offensive strikes in the pocket combinations, you know, after you were done. But he would wear you down by keeping pressure on you. He'd make you win every moment of your rounds, and next thing you know, you were tired and he was not. So then rounds, late in round two and then round three, he's absolutely giving you that work. That's what I saw when I first saw Daniel Younga. That's how he fought a lot. But added to it, something that Wendell Roche didn't have was he had the ability to stop you. He can land big shots with his hands, big step knees. Very, very skilled guy. Very talented guy. Daniel Younga, you know, he showed that he could fight tactically too, if you look at his history, because then you have something like when he went against in his fight with, I will say, the second fight that he had with Wendell Roche, and then another fight I would bring up is his fight with Dustin Jacoby. He can show that he can play the combination low kick game too, outside of just being a tough guy who can walk you down and find big overhand offense, big offense that can stop you. But unlike Roche, it seems like his chin did not hold up, but mentally he still thinks that it does. So he'll walk you down, he'll still look to throw offense in the pocket, he'll still look to be in there, mean, throwing shots, throwing big offense. Like, he'll still look to be that person in the pocket, despite the fact that his body and his chin does not hold up the same way. And Suspergi is a guy who was a very, very talented guy from France, and a lot of people had him pegged as, you know, a 209 killer for down the road. Not necessarily a KO pop guy, but a really savvy guy who had a weird style. But when he went in against his step-up opportunities, didn't do well against Younga, didn't do well against Nathan Corbett. Like, you wondered if he'd ever have that. But now, stayed with it late in his career, gets Daniel Younga again. I won't say late in his career, I'll just say a few years down the road, 4 or 5 years down the road. This is a big win for him. So we'll see if Spurgi can do something else, as I have butchered his name like 3 times. But we will see if Stefani can bounce back and, you know, from this win and turn it into something more. Because he has a talent, and I like the international pool of fighters that are emerging from France and so on. And even though he had his opportunity and went back, I like the fact that he's back in the picture again. So good win for, let's try it again, Spurgi. Okay. Last fight I'm going to talk about, oh, I guess I'll mention a couple ones quick. Molari Kalchikov gets a victory over Marina Spasic. I believe that was a female fight, but I didn't see that one at all. So please forgive, thus the difficulty with the names. But Mallory gets a victory there. And then, and I guess what one would call an upset, Miguel Celik is a victory over Philip Verlinden. And I've seen Celik fight a couple times. This is by far one of the more notable wins on his resume. Philip Verlinden, at this stage in his career, it's not that he's untalented, but it's weird that he's unable to find consistent kickboxing because he's so long and he can play a combination of low kicks, and he's a guy who's moved down the weight class, guy who's willing to fight anybody, fought at heavyweight even though he wasn't heavyweight, fought at 209 even though he can make, you know, what would be glorious middleweight division, and then his last run he was like 187 fighting there. But if I look at his wins, he's got wins over, like, you know, guys who aren't notable in kickboxing. But once upon a time, this guy's got a victory over Israel Adesanya. Fortunately, Israel Adesanya got that victory back. But Philip Verlinden got that victory over him in a card a long time ago when I first got introduced to Adesanya. And then, of course, I learned more about him after that fight. But Philip, it looks like he's got the tools, but for whatever reason, mental lapse, he gets himself out of positions where he's scoring consistent offense, and the next thing you know, he loses. So we'll see what happens to him moving forward. As far as Mikhail Celik, I just want to see him get that next opportunity. Step-up opportunities is what's needed in all of kickboxing, all of Muay Thai, and this win was good for him, but man, we need to see more. We need to see more from him, and I think that he's at a position in his life where the opportunities are going to come. But man, the fall of Daniel Younge is for sure, as I look at this full card, the story of the card. Before I leave it, there was one more result. Omar Samada gets a victory over Evgeny Kurovskoy. So that was the last one on that card that went down in Fight Night Topaz. So we shall see. We shall see what comes from the combat sport of, you know, are the cards that they're going to do with Fight Night down the road. But they've got some weird, the top of their card has always been a little bit weird. They also have the Jerome LeBanner 20-second down count that, you know, robbed Robertson of a victory. So weird stuff happens for their promotion. So what went down was no surprise to me whatsoever when I saw what happened to Bob Sapp at the beginning. But as I said before, 1-1 for Bob Sapp and Tony Gregory that weekend. Going to go ahead and look at a couple other things. I'll talk about this more when I get to it. And this was sent to me on Twitter to talk about. But Kunlun is doing it big at the end of this month. We've got a huge kickboxing weekend. I'm probably going to get some people on to do a full breakdown of it. But man, the end of this month, it's going to be fire. It's going to be fire with the Glory card and with the Kunlun fight card. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we shall see what it turns into. But go ahead and talk about a couple of the notables. As Kunlun's doing a 70kg tournament. And they're also doing a 66kg tournament. Some of the names that you guys have heard of that I'll just throw out there. Elias Belade will be competing. Signom will be competing. Gu Hui from China, he's a regular. Matsumoto will be competing. The aforementioned Pechenong, Bechamek, he's in this tournament, as we just talked about him in the lion fight. We've also got David Mejia is a guy they use quite often to get some Muhammad Goloi. Goloi, talented kid. Gen Kuiyao Gen Kuiyao. I've seen him fight a couple times for China. Should be an interesting battle there. Super Bonds, of course, doing his thing. He's a regular. Murat Kagorian against Jomfang. That's not the kind of fight that you want early in the tournament, but we've got it here. Just good names. Muhammad Mazari is a guy who's coming out of a lot of buzz coming out of Holland right now. He's Moroccan-based, or born in Morocco, but based in Holland. He's a talented kid. Him and Artem Pushporin. Pushporin's had success for them before. There's some really good stuff here. You know, Zanias Wave will take on Feng Zili. It's a fun card. Andre Kulubin is in this one. It's too big for him, but he'll be in this tournament. Will Romero from Canada. Yeah, I think it's a solid card, top to bottom. Should be interesting stuff. I'm going to do a breakdown once we get to that weekend, but it's cool to see the names. You know, you've been watching the game for a long time, watching the sport for a long time, to see these opportunities for people who've been in it. The poster, of course, has got, you know, Kiri Enzweb and Bechamek, Gregorian, Jomfang. people that we know. So should be good. I'm excited to see what happens to this down the road, but really a real fun card and a lot of good stuff in it. Gonna go ahead and talk about another single fight. Tenshin Nasukawa continues his legend as he puts on what could only be described as a beat down of Kazemon Saga. It was over with from the beginning. You know, it was the kind of fight where I'm like, man, Nasukawa is so talented, and they're doing what look, you know, 5-minute rounds at that. Oh, sorry, it just started playing right as I was talking to you guys. Sorry, as I was going through my notes, it started playing right as I was talking to you because I wanted to revisit it. Basically, the big KO happens when you gotta. I mean, I always say when I teach my fighters, dress your kicks up or dress your offense up if you're going to use your legs, because it gives the opportunity for people who are hitters to just try to time you when you're kicking and try to score you in that brief moment in between. Kazemon Saga tried to do a step knee when Nasukawa was in range, and he just got blasted and he was laid out like Snow Angel laid out. So Nasukawa gets a big victory. Kazemon Saga, of course, got history in the sport. He's got a resume in K1 back in the day. Nasukawa, it's just, he's another one of those guys. You just got to push him. He's the future. He's 18 years old. He's the most gifted, naturally gifted guy that I've seen since Nori. And I would even go back to say since Masato. I would say that his rise is more meteoric than all of them. I would say even more than Nori. And I love, you guys know how I love Masaki Nori. I would say Tenshin Nasukawa at this stage in his life has shown more natural tools to excel for a long period of time. Now, how does he do when it goes against, you know, a Nori or something like that? Whatever, we'll see as he grows into his body a little bit more. But as far as what am I seeing from this point on in his career, what am I seeing projection-wise, this guy's got the – it's like one of those things where it's like, man, kickboxing's down. And then you just get a few stars and it all turns around. Boxing's down. You get a few stars and it all turns around. It's just how combat sport's always going to be. There's always going to be some young up-and-comer that's going to take the sport into the future. He is that guy right now. This dude is special. We've got – luckily, he won't have to do it alone. If, you know, once he starts, you know, fighting in K1 and so on, the door will already be open for him because Takuru will already be there killing it. Sakinori will already be there killing it. So there will be a Japanese base for him to excel in front of already before he gets there. So he'll just move in and add to their star power. And then, you know, those guys are still relatively young. So when they head into their late 20s, early 30s, he'll be going into his prime of 22, 23 years old. Isn't that freaky, you know? So he is the truth. This kid is the future. We'll go ahead and start. I'll wrap the show up and, as I mentioned before, do a breakdown of why I went with the top 15 women's list, how I did it now. Of course, a couple of things I mentioned before. In it, I have an honorable mention. I talk about Melanie Higgins, as she has really, really turned her career around. I actually had the opportunity to meet her. My fighter, Montana Stewart, who's fought her last year in MMA. Really got to meet her then, and I actually got to meet her and another one of her fighters, she's a girl in her camp, and Anissa Hadoa, who I've ranked pretty high in this list this year. She's turned it around. She won the Crush Championship, clearly something she was probably brought in to lose, but she came out, won, defended it. Not only is that, but she competes in MMA here and there. She's winning too. She's really turned her career around. She's having a huge year, and you just stay with it. She's young, hungry, kept training, had some losses, had losses in a row, had losses against the elite. She's lost to several girls on this list. She's lost to Amon Barlow, but she just stayed with it, and then the opportunity came for more success, and she won. Samantha Van Doren, she lost. She fell off the list, but she's still one of the better fighters in the world, losing to Jordina Vanderlinden. I got to get more for Vanderlinden before I can rank her higher on the list, but she's in the radar, as is Leticia Magine. Excuse me, I'm going to mess this name up. It's French. So, but Leticia, I've got, but I believe it's Genese, I hope I'm pronouncing her last name right. But she got a weird decision victory over Hadou. A lot of people didn't like that, but Nevertheless, it happened. China, sometimes there's some weird decisions. If she's consistent and she wins more, we can get her on the list down the road. But as of right now, she fights waist-high kickboxing, and the level for that is usually pretty low until I start to see those athletes go against international K-1 rules, Glory rules, full rules, Muay Thai. That's when I can see the separation in the skill set. But as far as just waist-high up kickboxing, where, you know, sometimes you have a kick count you have to have and that kind of deal, whatever, I think it's a little bit harder to gauge the talent level until I see them against other athletes, because it's a niche for kickboxing, you know. Kickboxing, Muay Thai, we're a niche sport, and that is niche for us. So we get into the list of the names that you guys will actually know. Some of them will be new. New entry to the list is Patricia Axling. She is known mostly for her wrestling in the IFMAs, and I talked about it before, because sometimes I try to keep it more international, more pro, but because so many professional women fight in the IFMAs, if you can develop a good resume there, I will consider you for the list. And that's what she did here. Her biggest victory coming over Julie Brezikova. I think she's legit. I think she's a talent. I think we'll see more from her down the road. Anka Van Gestel, still sitting around that 14 mark. She still holds an Infusion title. She's not old, you know what I'm saying? I think she's 24, 25. Very veteran, fought all over the world, and some of her losses, I mean, she lost to, what, Shevchenko? No shame there, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's a talented, talented girl. Want to see more for her down the road. In the moment that I think someone's going to upset her and kind of remove her from the rankings, she'll get some wins. Not to mention, she usually gets herself to the, you know, semifinals of Worlds and that kind of stuff. The only problem was she competed at the same weight class as Valentina Shevchenko. So, of course, it just meant that they would run into each other quite often, and that's always a tough one. We move down to Mio Tsumura. Now, Mio, of course, is known simply as Mio. She is, you know, she got a win beating Hana Gajuan on the most recent S Cup girls competition. I can't think of what it's called. It wasn't their tournament, but it was just kind of like a single fight night. But Mio is, you know, of course, she's kind of got the cute look. She's very young, only 20. She's got decent KO pop. Not great, but decent. Like she can pop. She can put you down. She's got some stoppages here and there. They push her. She's going to keep getting opportunities. So, young woman, 20 years old. Hopefully, they can bring more resume in for her, because she's 48 kgs. Something that I invested more time into in this tournament field. But she's going to just need more international competition to move forward. So, I mentioned this before, there is a MMA writer named a full rules Muay Thai writer who is based out of Thailand, who also fights. Her name is Sylvie Von Douglas Itu, and she has gotten on me before. Last year, I linked her website for women that were 48 kgs and around there, because she had a great list. And then she got on me because I didn't mention the name of them, and she was like, just the exposure. So this year, I'm not going to do it wrong. This year, I sat down, I studied the list, and I was like, okay, do they have international victories? That's kind of the biggest thing that I go off of. And I found it. So going into this list, Loma Lukbonmi, who is on the top of Sylvie's personal, you know, list for the weight class, I got her in at number 12. She had a very good IFMA run, and very importantly, she beat Kim Townsend in Australia, which means she traveled internationally, and that's very, very important to me in the list. You got to get yourself out there, you got to get yourself noticed, and you got to, international usually means fighting competition from all over. Remember, just last year, I talk about Masaki Nori. He traveled to France, you know, and he had some fights there, you know, he had a big win out that way. Masato traveled. You may not do it all the time, but you got to do it sometimes. And Loma left, went to Australia, got a victory. She comes in my list at 12. Amel Debbie is the Glory runner-up in last year's tournament. She's undefeated before it, but good style. She's got savvy skill. I thought she did some good stuff. You can see, go ahead and hit up Glory if you want to see some of her older fights, but and then put her name in, Amel Debbie. she showed me some talent. And remember, that was a toss-up anybody could have won when she lost to Tiffany Von Soest. Just nobody knew. Nobody knew which way that one was going to go. It was really, really close. The judges all leaned towards Tiffany Von Soest's work, but watching it, I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell. She won Germany, I couldn't tell. So awesome stuff for Emil Debbie, even though she lost. And, of course, here's the, her bounce-back year, some wins locally, and hopefully get another opportunity to fight in Glory. Glory comes back to France in November, so hopefully she gets on that card. Number 10, one of the last of the smaller female fighters out there, but an internet superstar in it. Petsy G. Mikun. Petsy is a girl who I've mentioned before as she's known as the girl who beats the boys. So she's got those YouTube videos. Now, I mentioned that before. Iman Barlow locally was known as the girl who beat the boys. But in the way that when Iman Barlow was young and she is fighting elite, I won't say elite, but she's fighting the better men when she was the better boys when she was a boy. Boy, she's going against boys in Thailand. In that way, Petsy did the exact same thing. Like Arfetsy did the exact same thing. Fought elite fighters, boys for that age. And then as she grew up, she started to segue back into going against women as she's going into 14. Because, of course, it's going to change drastically for her as 14, 15 years old. There's going to be something, as Iman Barlow puts it, the boys just change. They turn into men around that age. But as far as skill goes, she's beating people and she's stopping them. She just beat Sandra Godvic in June, and that matters to me because that's international. She's not just going against Thais. They're bringing people in. Are there people who are vacationing there? And she's going against them. And we're still talking about a 14, 15-year-old girl. And she is beating them. She is as skilled as they can be. She is probably, talent-wise, if you just go off natural ability to understand distance, knees, clinch work, sweeps, low kick, high kick, body kick game, she's so complete. She's got every tool. I really do believe that she is special, and she will be something down the road. She just needs a manager that can get her international opportunities. She gets that. She has the ability to be the biggest female star based from Thailand ever, and there really is no name for that list. There is no elite Thai female that everybody in the world knows or has ever known. I think she's got the opportunity to be that, going from the girl who beats the boys to the best female Muay Thai fighter recognized-wise internationally. I think she's got that ability. So she comes in at 10. Wang Qihan lost a close decision to Anissa Hadao, but before that, I mean, she was just absolutely killing people. She's just got the stoppage power, she closes the distance, she throws mean, and I really did think that she had beaten Hadao after the first three rounds. I could make an argument for her winning 2-1, but she clearly lost the extra. So Wang Qihan came out there, threw big shots, got herself some big KOs early, but she'll have to bounce back and possibly fight Anissa again down the road. Nevertheless, she fights elite competition. She's fighting good competition that leads her to elite opportunities because she's always in the tournament that they have for Kunlun. So shout out to Wang Qihan, and hopefully better for her down the road. Antonina Shevchenko holds down number 8. She was around this spot last year. Problem with this one was she had an opponent and then right last second lost the opponent. I think it was like some sort of visa issue or something like that, whatever. But Antonina is legit. She will be fighting again at the end of September. Big month for her. Sister fights for the world, the UFC title earlier in the month. But she'll be doing her thing in line fight. She's just too skilled. Too good with the clinch work. Too good with the sweep game. And her distance striking is on point. Antonina Shevchenko holds down number 8. Tiffany Von Soest, the Glory champion, comes in at 7. Always fun to watch, very entertaining. The only problem with her is the Glory tournament field wasn't that great. And the, it could have been better, but they lost some fighters. And, of course, there's nothing you could do about that. She couldn't have told that. It would have been her versus Iman in the final, for sure, if Iman was in it. But Iman's people had some contract dispute or some trouble with her fighting and that organization, so it didn't end up happening. I saw that, Von Soest, and I'd mentioned this before, that their people thought that she was ducking her or something like that. Couldn't be further from the truth. Tiffany, and I've seen it happen before with people's management, and I've seen it happen with people in Glory before. I don't think in any situation would I say that Kevin Ross was afraid of anybody, but I know that his line fight commitment had a problem with the glory commitments, and it didn't end up happening. And I know that money came into play at some period of time for other athletes, and I just know that those contracts are hard to work around. So if it's single fight, sometimes they give you some room, but Iman is the face of the Infusion women's division, so I can see why there would be some difficulty in them, making a decision that would give her the opportunity to compete for a long period of time. So she wasn't able to do that. Tiffany Von Seuss then went ahead and continued to kickbox. She won that tournament. That tournament wasn't great, but she won that tournament. This year she fought MMA a couple times, and she's making her return to kickboxing. The big thing for me, of course, is now that we've got, the number one fighter, female fighter in the world, and Anissa Mexen in Glory, that's got to be the big fight. That's got to be their big fight for the December year, or December. So I'm not sure how it's going to go, because for all I know, they're going to use Anissa and France, and it's not going to happen. But I'm telling you, if they are trying to make December card a big deal like it was last year, that's who they got to bring in. They got to bring that. They got to bring that fight together. Tiffany Von Seuss, number 7 on my list, as she would meet, hopefully, Anissa Mexen in December in Holland. So we go down to number 6, Anissa Hadow. As I mentioned before, coming off the big win over Wang Yihan, close. I definitely had, no question about it, had her winning the extra round. She is talented. She's got the look. She also wins on the promotions in Holland to keep herself consistent. I mean, she's just a talent. Her combination low kick game holds up no matter who she's going against. She's got a good eye for finding her offense. She had Wang in trouble with the head kick. Just a very, very talented young lady. I think she's 20, 21 maybe. That's what you need from the future. You need young stars that are going to be there tomorrow. Anissa Do has all the talent in the world. She trains at Mike's gym, so she's got that backing. She's got, Melanie as her main training partner. Not to mention, kickboxing so hot in Holland, she's got the bodies around all over the place. So Anissa Hadoe, she comes in at number 6, but if the opportunity comes up for her to move up, she will, because she's got the skill set to beat other elite girls. So shout out to her. She'd like to fight in Glory, said that she's just kind of sitting around waiting on that call. I can't wait for her to get that call too. She's very, very talented, and you want to continue to be in a platform that gets you out there. Now, the Premier Fight League is doing a good job there in Holland, and she's got some opportunities there, but she'll need more because she is talented enough to win at the highest level. Next fight on the fighter I'm going to talk about, top 5. Top 5, very similar to how I had it last year. Rena Kubota. Rena, of course, is got all the potential to be one of the bigger stars in the world in kickboxing. She already is, but her victory over Jelena Valentino is huge because I believe they fought in MMA too, but this kickboxing victory is big because Valentino's got some really good wins. Like, she is a solid fighter. It's probably one of the better wins Rena's got in a while. But again, she wins on the scorecards, I believe, 230-28, 130-29, which means that there were some close rounds in there. But Rena's the truth. She continues to compete in both shootboxing, kickboxing, and in mixed martial arts. She's got the looks. She can be one of the stars for the future. And she's really, I won't say carrying, but she's the biggest female star as far as kickboxing goes in Japan. And that's a, even though Kakutugi is a little bit down, combat sports still recognizes her as a pretty face and someone to push the sport forward. Denise Akilo, it's a little disappointing that we haven't seen her that much this year, but she could fight. She's awesome. When she gets her offense going, she's one of the most entertaining fighters to watch. Very, very talented. I'm hoping that they announce something with her. I'm hoping just, they announce anything. I saw that we've got an announcement that there's going to be a title fight for Kevin Ross, I think, against an Italian fighter whose name eludes me in the moment. But, man, I hope she gets on that card. I just want to see her compete again. So get Denise Akilso Helt out there. And as we're on the subject, we go into number 3, Yuna Bears. Same thing. Yuna Bears has got to get high-level opportunities. But she's already the best in a weight class that's not very deep. So just keep getting her opponents. Just keep getting her opposition. And they're out there. You can watch the, you know, the IFMAs and find some girls. There are girls that will compete with Serena Bars. So they've got to be more consistent with their shows, and then they've got to be more consistent with getting their athletes out there, because Urina is the truth. Now, of course, she's taking care of some life things. She now owns the gym that she used to train at. She's now the boss of the security business that she used to work for. So she's still busy with life, but Urina is the truth. She can really, really fight, and I want to see more from her down the road. This leads us to number two, Iman Barlow. One of the most important things for me is winning on the road, and I think Iman Barlow does it the most. Iman Barlow goes to Halifax, Canada, and beats Ashley Nichols. Close on the scorecards, but Iman Barlow is able to get the victory there. She fights so much between Infusion and fighting at home for local promotions, and she just puts herself out there. Iman Barlow, clearly one of the best women fighters in the world. I think that there's a gap between three and four and one and two. Not a big gap, but I think that there's, as far as consistent resume in recent years, nobody fights and is as active as Iman Barlow is, and Anissa Mexen. And I think that, like I said before, Anissa Mexen's victory over her is a product of... is the reason why she's number one. But as far as your resume and what's accomplished and fighting at a high level and winning consistently, Iman Barlow does it year in and year out. She goes to other girls' hometowns, to other girls' countries, and she comes away with dominant victories. Good stuff here from Iman Barlow. And of course, we wrap the list up with Anissa Mexen. She's just the truth. She's coming off of her first glory fight. She gets a victory over JD Menezes. And, as somebody fights 8 to 12 times a year, she's just so talented. There's just so much skill. She's got a great understanding of distance. She can box. She takes just boxing matches, but she can box. She's got good kickboxing. Her hook-low kick game is there. Her switch kick is on point. Her ability to find counters and find big offense. She can drop you. She can put you down. She's got a victory. She's got a stoppage victory over Iman Barlow. So she is as tough as they come. Anissa Mexen is the truth. And the biggest thing for her star power would be if they put on, when they put on a big show in December, part of that big show has got to be Mexen versus Tiffany Von Soos. It is the fight that should be the biggest female fight in kickboxing this year. I'm going to make a highlight video for it if it's announced, but I'm really, really excited to see what would happen with it down the road. So that's my list. That's why I put it together. I hope you guys liked it, and I will be back next week with another episode. And then, of course, the week after that, I believe, is the really, really exciting supercard. I mean, we've got Glory going down. We've got the Kunlun fights. We've got some good stuff coming up down in the next couple weekends. So thanks, everybody, for listening. God bless, and have a good one. And thanks again for all the people who gave me the positive messages about getting married. Peace.